I met a 12-year-old girl about 20 years ago in South Fayetteville, and my girlfriend at the time, who became my wife, she and I met this 12-year-old girl and walked with her to her house and met her family and met her extended family, and that would be the interaction that was the one thing that introduced us to a different population in our hometown here in Fayetteville.
From the Atypical Podcast, it's the One Thing series. Discussions with dreamers, doers, thinkers, and catalysts, where they tell their story as well as the one thing that shaped their life or work and made them who they are. What is that belief or epiphany or occurrence in their life that so entrenched itself that it changed their trajectory? I'm Matt Mooney.
And I'm Jenny Mooney.
And this is The One Thing.
So I'm a Fayetteville kid. I grew up here in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I was born at Washington Regional, the hospital here.
Do you want to call the hogs real fast?
No, that's okay.
Okay.
That's okay. But I would.
In your heart, you do.
I know the hogs. Grew up here, lived here all my life, left for a year to go to school at Kansas, made it a year somewhere else, and then came back. So this is my place. Grew up in a great family who really, really loves people well. And so that was kind of the foundation of my home and my upbringing is you love people and you love all people, and Fayetteville's pretty close-knit, and I went to Washington Elementary, so there was some diversity going on there. Went to Woodland, there's a little bit less diversity. The high school, there's some diversity, but as I grew up, I definitely knew people who didn't have similar backgrounds, similar home lives that I did. I have two parents, loving, both working, two brothers. So it was really very stable. So I knew some that didn't have that, but not intimately, and didn't know some of the other things that were going on here in our community. So go through, but I definitely had a heart for people, had a heart for classmates or things. And when I say I had a heart for, I cared about people. That's something that my parents, you know, really poured into us. We weren't actively engaged in serving at, you know, a soup kitchen or a Thanksgiving meal, but there was just always the knowledge that you look around and you see people and you care for people. And if somebody's hurting, you need to be there and you need to be there to listen. And so that continued. And there was nothing during that time of a God focus in my home growing up. And so it was the second greatest commandment without the first. I mean, for us growing up, it was you love people, but there just wasn't anything about loving God with all of your being. So get into junior high and meet my girlfriend, who's now my wife, at Woodland Junior High.
Shout out to Anita.
Yep. She began a process of introducing me to Jesus and got me a Bible, and I was very drawn to God. I mean, even from a young age, I remember thinking about things of God.
So when you talk to young people, Sean, just a real fast detour,
mm-hmm.
you know, we always tell them, you know, don't missionary date, right? Like,
yep.
like there were a few girls when I was growing up that I wanted to go on dates with, you know, and it wasn't because of Jesus,
yep.
you know, they weren't walking with Jesus.
But you could bring them around.
But, you know, I thought, yep. hey, listen, what better way for me to show them Jesus than to ask them on a date, to hang out with me.
Sit in the back row of the movie theater.
And stumble the rest of the way.
Yep.
Anyway, so you're left, you're kind of like, you're the great hope for the high school kid that's listening that says, you know, boy, I should, because, I mean, you guys worked out.
Worked out
for y'all.
Yeah, we're the hope and we're the story. We're the argument for lots of junior high kids and high school kids.
When did you and Anita meet?
We were Woodland Junior High. I was in seventh grade. She was in
eighth grade.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work out like that, kids.
We wouldn't recommend it.
Okay.
And yeah. we wouldn't even allow it with okay. our kids. So,
no, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
So don't, you know, follow us.
But we are the argument that yeah, kids no. can use.
Absolutely.
Hey, that worked out for them.
Yep.
But yeah.
So Anita,
So Anita's so
way to know, go.
Yep.
Good job. You did what so many of us could not do. So carry on, Sean, with your story. Hit back in there. Junior high, Sean.
So junior high, high school, I go through that. And really, it is a go through the religious, practices that I see that these friends and my girlfriend are doing of go to church, read your Bible, know some answers that I had no idea about. And continue that through high school.
That was a real captivating, your heart was really captured.
It was
not yet.
No, it was terrible. Yeah, it was totally a knowledge, totally a, went to church with her and hated every minute of it and looked
but
at my
maybe
watch.
Maybe we'll
and,
hold hands later.
Exactly.
I'm
sitting there with you. So
yeah, it's all good.
Get to my freshman year of college and it changes. I mean, the knowledge that I was developing and understanding of sin and God and stories in Scripture, the Holy Spirit takes, and there's not a moment, there's not a second there, but there definitely my freshman year of college into my sophomore, it became what I was seeking in knowledge became a heart transformation and fell in love with Jesus, fell in love with the things of Jesus. And so then that leads to this connection for me of, oh, okay, now I have this underpinning, this second greatest commandment. Now I've fallen in love with the author of the second greatest commandment and the one who created people. Okay, now there's a reason to love people beyond this is what you do. And man, he made them. He loves them. He cares about them. So that happens. I go to my freshman year of college. I go to my sophomore year of college. And I realize I'm 2 years into college. I've developed this love relationship with Jesus, and I have no idea why I'm going to school. I don't have a map that's laid out in front of me. And so I think he didn't say it audibly. So I think God told me to stop going to college. So I stopped going to school.
Another thing that just the junior high kids are applauding. Continue on.
Yep.
Continue on.
So I drop out of college. My parents are about as supportive of parents as you can possibly have. And so I had saved up a little bit of money that I could live off of. I'm living at home. So my goal in stepping out of school was to really turn my focus on Jesus and figure out what he has for my life. So I don't want to go out and get a job and just fill the time that I'd be going to school with a job. And so I take pretty much a semester, probably closer to a year, and I just focus on him. I walk around. I do stuff. I mean, I walk around Fayetteville. I don't drive my car for a while. My wife, Anita, girlfriend at the time, lives 3 or 4 miles away. I'd walk to her house and memorize scripture. I'd walk around. And I'm just met with Jim Hall, who was discipling me, so he's given me books. So I'm really developing. I'm being developed. This is not a conscious thing on my part, but it's a, hey, here's the next thing I think I'm supposed to do. During
no, wait, just a second.
Yeah.
Now, so it's not a. You say, what do you mean when you say it's not a conscious thing on your part? Because here's what I'm here. I mean, this is a, you know, you're telling your own story. I know you can't toot your own horn here, but it's a pretty. I mean. Your parents were supportive. So that's the first thing in this equation that makes probably this possible. But, you know, you had to have some questions from people watching Sean's life play out. Here he was. He was in college. He went to KU. He's back. What's Sean doing? Oh, Sean has dropped out because he is really following Jesus. He's walking around Fayetteville. He's reading a lot of books. He's praying. I mean, you had to have some naysayers in that point of your life.
Yes, within my social circle, it was a great group of people, middle class type culture, and so it was. Hey, that's great that you're doing that. That you dropped out of college. When are you going back? Is the next question of. Hey, that's really good. Make sure you find your plan fast before you wreck your whole life. And so yeah, there was some naysayers, but when I say it wasn't a conscious thing, it wasn't like I was. Hey, I've got this plan. It's all developed. And that would kind of be an aspect of my whole life up to now is I'm just going to do the next thing. And here's the next thing that I feel like the Lord's telling me to do. And that's stop going to school. Okay, check, now what? And now what was, okay, seek him. Okay, do these couple studies. Okay, and there really wasn't a now what until my girlfriend, maybe fiance at the time, I don't remember the exact date, but she was doing her master's degree at Jefferson Elementary School in South Fayetteville. And I was spending a lot of time down there. I mean, I have time, so I'm going to go and hang out with kids and meet the kids that she's pouring into. And so we're down there, and we meet this young lady, and we walk with her down to her family's home. And it's a different kind of home. She had multiple siblings, gorgeous and fun and smiles, but very different than what I was used to. I mean, her 2-year-old little sister with a big smile on her face flipped me off, and just as kind of, you know,
there you go.
It was just something that she'd seen, and so she wasn't mad. She wasn't saying, you know, F you. She was just, hey, here's something I've watched happen.
For me, those go together. So she hadn't learned that yet.
She had not. Yeah, she hadn't learned it. So welcomed right into the home, and the home inside was very different than homes that I'd been in. It was darker, and windows were blacked out, and mattresses at different places. And so it was a different thing for us. But at that moment, the Lord kind of intersected Anita and I's life, and we fell in love with a group of people that, you know, fast forward to now, that are really dear, close family, if friends, if not family, that we're very intertwined with. And so at that moment, I didn't know what was next, and then I meet this family, and I still don't know how that plays out, but I know this is something that's next for us.
And so you're being very nuanced. These are people that you have relationships with, and the mm-hmm. way you talk about it matters. But when you were being introduced to something that you had not known before, is that described as poverty? Is it, what is it?
Well, you know, there were some things with this individual family, and then as we've gotten to know our community, I didn't realize there was prostitution in our community. I didn't realize there was drug abuse. I didn't realize abuse that went on in people's homes. I didn't realize that there was systemic oppression that went on. I didn't realize some people had to think about, should I have my hands in my pocket when I walk into a grocery store? I didn't realize people didn't have transportation. And so some of that, I would say a lot of it is around socioeconomic status and race status. I mean, you know, those two things were the things that we kind of have come to the realization of, hey, there's differences here.
And so here you are, Sean, you're young and you've taken off, you're seeking Jesus in a new way, you're growing in him, you at least from a peripheral view have to look a little bit crazy to folks who see you walking around and trying to find this Jesus thing, and you're done with college, and that's a wonderful part of the story for me, because that makes no sense to people, and a lot of times what God is doing with us makes no sense to people, mm-hmm. and he always leads us into places that... you know, I don't, persecution might be the wrong word, but feeling stupid is the right word. And so here you are, Sean, and you're looking, you know, you describe yourself as looking, and you just do the next thing, and you stumble into kind of that one thing. How would you say in your time, there that day, what is for you the one thing?
The one thing is that we have fallen in love with people who are very different than we are. And not only fallen in love, but we've been dramatically changed by people who are different than we are. And we gravitate to people who are really similar same as we are or very similar to what we are, whether that be the color of our skin, the culture that we grew up with, the socioeconomic status, just our tendency is to fall in with people who parent the way we do, use the same words that we do, view life the same.
Two-year-olds don't flip off as much.
Yeah, true.
A little bit.
And that one thing that day has changed and altered my life and my family's life and who our community is to the point that we're different in a really positive way because we've got diverse relationships all around us.
A brief break in the action here. We are speaking with Sean Schwartzman, the founder and leader of Potter's House, an organization right here in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And he is telling us how he started by meeting one person different than him and working forward from there. A quick word from a sponsor of ours, that's 99 Balloons, may have heard of it. Jenny and I started it, and I am honored to get to work for it. We have a program that we want to tell you about called All In. All In is a child sponsorship program to help children with disability be able to attend school in Haiti, Uganda, and India. You may not be aware, because I certainly wasn't before I became involved globally with disability, but 9 out of 10 children with disability in developing countries are not attending school. That is, they are unwelcomed or not able to attend. And so we have started All In at 99 Balloons to help children be included in education, in classrooms, and in their community. If you will go to 99balloons.org/all-in, you could find more information there about it. And we certainly hope that you will do that and help us as we seek to change the story of disability.
And so take me back to that day, Sean, in walking out of there and you knowing, man, something has occurred, something has shifted, something has happened, but I have no idea what. And so walk me forward in the story from that day. What began from that?
Yeah, hey, there's something different here. And some things may be wrong. Some things may need to be changed. And some things are just different and do not have to become, there's no change. I did realize that there are some things here that are hard. And there's no quick fix. There's no easy fix. There's no silver bullet, whether that be to poverty or to broken relationships or to abuse and neglect, that kind of stuff. But the answer for us was we're gonna form relationships. I mean, again, this is coming up out of my whole foundation of life of you love people and you have relationships, and now there's Jesus is at the center of that whole deal. And so for us, we just tried to come up with a model of function. And again, it sounds way more understood and direct, systematized than it was. It was, hey, we're gonna be friends with this family. And so we started just interweaving our lives with them. And then we started meeting friends and neighbors and cousins that are within this community that we know and love. And so then that was the beginning of what has become Potter's House. The first form of that was, hey, we started inviting other people into that and into those relationships. And then the beginning, the first kind of form was every Sunday night we'd all get together and we'd eat a meal together. We'd walk across the street, and this church down the street there allowed us to use their basement. And we just kind of, we'd break into little small groups and we would start intentionally engaging those relationships a little bit more.
And so So begin with this introduction and the shift, kind of it's hard for us to not just completely fast forward to what Potter's House is today, and I certainly want to get there, but walk me through some of the awkward moments or the lessons learned when you're trying to take, in some ways, you're trying to put together kind of more of a middle class, more known to be a little bit white in their skin tone. Possibly, though that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. In South Fayetteville, when you're mixing with a very diverse group of people, often black, not all black by any mm-hmm. stretch of the imagination. But here you got these two different pockets of people that you're intentionally putting together. And Potter's House in our community is so beautifully known for doing that. Almost assumed if you see something going on in Fayetteville that looks like two different pockets of people, you're like, oh, what's Potter's House doing over there? Which is a testimony to what you guys are doing and who you are and all that you stand for. And that's both good and bad. It should hopefully be happening without Potter's House. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't. And you guys build those avenues, and it doesn't always. And you guys have championed that. But what are some of the stories, lessons, awkward realities? Because if I'm listening to this, I have a tendency to do the same thing that so many people do with disability ministry to me, Sean, which is, that's so good for you. Right? Mm-hmm. Like I will write, where do I write a check to Potter's House? But that messy relationship, giving your life to something and being open to some awkwardness of living out life with different people who you think God wants you to have relationships with, actually, instead of avoiding or writing a check to or getting in a line and providing a service to, which we all feel great about, but then we didn't really have to know anybody. Maybe you don't feel that way, Sean. I feel that in the world I'm in. And I think that's why you and you're not just someone I'm interviewing. We're in the same community group. You're a friend of mine. You're someone that I admire. And I think in the pockets that we work with, though we are doing wildly different things, we are trying to introduce people to things that are otherwise awkward, outside of their box, and probably a little bit fearful to them. And we're trying to say, you know, Jesus is pushing you this way, and because he wants to change you, not because he wants to change whatever you think you might be doing.
Yeah, and not necessarily because he wants you to just bring those people to become what you are. Mm. You know, the goal isn't saying, hey, man, I think a lot of times we think we have the right answers, and we think, hey, if just more people out of poverty or out of disability or whatever, if they could just become more like us, then it would be great. And that was a lot of the early awkwardness and the awkwardness now. I mean, when you're engaging in another culture, when you're engaging with another group, that we tend to view people living in poverty as there's something wrong there, and we view the way they parent wrong, we view the way they spend their time or their money or things like that. A lot of times we think it's wrong. So some people coming to some of those relationships, that was a part of the awkwardness there, is we've got to help people understand that this isn't about fixing, this isn't about rescuing, this is about long-term relationships where we're all going to be changed in the midst of that. So there was some awkwardness there. There's some awkwardness, to be totally honest, with the relationships of the people we were starting to get to know in the community. And there, it takes a long time to develop trust with a group of people that have been hurt maybe more than the rest of us, have been isolated more than the rest of us.
Yeah, there's fear and a resistance on both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when people grow up in a community and they're pushed aside, they're not really championed, and then somebody's coming up, the thought is, hey, you're just like everybody else, and you've got an agenda and you want to accomplish something, and I'm your means to accomplish something, as opposed to, hey, you really want to get to know, you do want to engage in this relationship, and you are just hanging out at the house, and you do just want to have my family over, but there's a lot of barriers. So there brings a lot of awkward moments and miscommunications and anger and fear. We've had all kinds of moms and dads that are frustrated and angry out of miscommunications. And these are more early days. You know, now someone will come up and they go, hey, I'm with Potter's House. And it's like, oh, okay, great. I trust you with my life, in a sense. Maybe at times even too much. But in those early days, there was that. There was also, I mean, I was 21 at the time. So, I mean, there's funny things of just, I'm 21. I don't have kids. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I mean, we would try and get a group of kids, a diverse group of kids, from a school where we ate a meal across the street to this church. And they would run all over the street across the street. And so at one point somebody had the idea and they said, well, let's bring a rope and we'll have everybody just hold the rope and they'll walk across. Well, they like tied each other up with it before we even got across the street. I mean, it's just, we had no idea what we were doing and how we were doing it. And we were trying to do something good and put some structure to it, but there was definitely some growing pains along the way.
So what would you say, not to put you as the person pointing the finger and the authority, because I know you won't let me do that, though I see you that way. But if you got to speak to the church at large and they were going to listen and you got to sit down with whatever face that looked like in probably more in our space, right? In white America, evangelical, but broader than that, if you got to speak to the church at this point in time, what would you tell the church?
Probably two things. One, it's really all about relationships. And if you make it anything other than that, it's going to go funky fast. And so if you come in to try and rescue, you're without a relationship, it's going to get bad. Relationships take a long time. You've got to build trust. And so it's time. And so relationships would be a big thing. And church at large, really, one of the major things is we really want people to enter our world. And some churches are worse than this than others of, hey, yeah, we do want to do an outreach so people will come here. They'll help build our little kingdom. And we really, I mean, it's kind of a popular thing right now. Hey, we want diversity in our church. We want it in our church, and we want our church to kind of stay the same and have our current values, and we don't want to really rock our boat, but so we want a group of other people to come in and behave and function similar to what we like and we want. And that's just not okay. If we're not willing to change and adjust and shift and push people's boxes, then it's not going to happen. And if our goal is to build our churches and make them look a certain way, but stay really kind of to the level that we think it should look, we're going about it all wrong. Now, if we say, hey, there's some people in our community who are isolated, they're hurt, there's some brokenness, then we would benefit from these relationships. We're broken in some ways. We need diversity in our life to help reveal some things about ourselves. Then we start seeing value in people and we start doing whatever it takes to build those relationships and not doing it in a way that builds our thing. We're doing it in a way that is really looking for the diversity at large.
And so from the walking to the home of the girl to all of the lessons that you have learned, I want you to just tell me what Potter's House is doing today in our community of Fayetteville, Arkansas, that we both love. Just tell me about it. To someone who doesn't know what Potter's House is, what are you doing?
Our dream, what we're doing is we are moving people to live life together in diverse relationships. And so we want, across ethnic and socioeconomic lines, we want people living life together. And so for us, that comes in many forms, but really the forms, whether it be, I mean, we have a preschool, we have a couple thrift stores where we do job training, we have after-school tutoring, we have small groups, we have a leadership group that works with junior high and high school students. But through any of those things, our goal is to introduce people to each other in our community. And So to get people to come and to get people to life together, there's just lots of barriers. And we realize, hey, that this just doesn't happen naturally. We just don't naturally meet people. And a lot of times when we try, we do it in some really awkward, strange ways. And so we've created some common places that people can come together in a safe way and form these diverse relationships. And then whenever they form those, okay, then now we know each other. Now our families know each other. Now we've got to do the hard work to get to where we're living life together, and we know each other, and we support one another, and we become a part of each other's social networks in a very real and natural way. So that's what we're doing here. Again, some people may go, oh, you're Potter's House. You're a thrift store. We are a thrift store, and the thrift store is here in order to create life together. And we are a preschool, but if you characterize only by a preschool, it's greatly diminishing what those teachers are doing and what the parents are doing. When a parent enrolls her child at Wet Cement is the name of the preschool, she's engaging her child into a network of relationships, and she, as the parent, is being engaged in a network of relationships that is pushing her to life together. If there's any one event that just describes or emulates Potter's House and life together, we did it wrong for a while, and that is kind of shown. But if the event now is called Potter's House Christmas.
And at first, this is just who I am, Sean. Uh-huh. First, tell me how you did it wrong.
Well, I'll get
before
there.
You skip over it. Okay.
Okay. No. I'll totally get there because it's a part of how we got here. But currently now, what a Potter's House Christmas is about 800 people will come together for a meal and to celebrate the good things that God's doing in the Potter's House community. So what that came out of was something that we did for, I think we did it for 12, 14 years, something. It was called Giveaway Day. And the heart behind it was great. The idea was we're going to go throughout the community. We are going to gather toys. And then we're going to invite the community to come and shop at Christmas for free. And that will help us engage with our community. And so it was a beautiful thing, and it was a terrible thing.
Yeah, we're going to allow, I think we all see the beauty, which we're going to allow parents to be able to come and give gifts to their kids for Christmas that they otherwise wouldn't be able to give. So what's the ugly?
Yeah. So what would happen is people would come, and they'd form this huge line, and they would get a number, and we would fill all the rooms at the Boys and Girls Club with new toys, and a parent, you'd come in, and you'd had two children, and you didn't have to prove your income. It was just anybody in the community. And so you'd walk through, and a volunteer would be matched with you, and you'd walk through, and you'd talk and get to know each other, and you'd pick out gifts for your kids, and then they'd go and get wrapped, and the person would pray for you, and then they'd send you off. And it seemed really, really great. It accentuated and declared who didn't have and who did have. And there was no follow-up on relationships. There was no goal to follow up on relationships. It got to the point that I think we had, I'm terrible with numbers. I think it was close to like 1,000 families who came through. And so if growth is success, it was exponentially more successful every year over and over and over, over again.
Yeah.
And it could have been.
Are you saying that growth is not success?
Well, you know, see, I've marked
it down here.
I've heard really smart people say healthy things grow.
Yeah.
And I get that, but also unhealthy things grow. I mean, I have lots of weeds
Preach.
In my yard.
Preach.
So this was a what I believe was an unhealthy thing. And every year we got done and we loved it. And we evaluated what we didn't like about it. And so what we decided is, hey, what if we took the same amount of resources that people in the community you want to give around Christmas, and they want to buy gifts, and they want to do something. And so we like to give people the opportunity to give. I think that's a great thing. There's generosity, and man, Thanksgiving and Christmas hit, and that generosity muscle, people just want to exercise it. And I think that's an avenue in order to future, you know, use the generosity. So we said, hey, why don't we use the same resources that are given, the same time, the same effort, and do something that really is Potter's House? Because we'd have people go, hey, I'm a part of Potter's House. I serve at Potter's House Christmas. And really, they were getting the antithesis of what Potter's House is. I come in, I serve one day, I serve a person, I help them, there's no relationship, and there's not going to be a relationship for another year. That's like the opposite of long-term, healthy relationships where we're both learning and growing from each other.
And you did it for 12 years.
We did it for a long time.
And what I love about so much of who you are is you admit that. That's, you know, most leaders would not lead out with, let me teach you how we did it wrong. But, you know, just that's part of going into unknown areas and uncharted territory and awkward spaces is the bravery that it takes to be able to, and the humility that it takes to be able to say, you know, next year, year 13, we're going to completely scratch something that seemingly going great. A lot of people giving, a lot of people coming. We're going to scratch that because it's not doing what we want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So kudos.
So what it became is a Potter's House Christmas. And now we invite everyone who's a part of Potter's House. If you're a volunteer, if you're a mom, if you're a employee at our thrift store, if your child's at the preschool, your whole family gets to come. If you're a tutor at the after-school tutoring, we invite everybody to come, and everybody sits at a table that we predetermine your seat, and we make those tables. You're sitting with people that you know in this diverse community. So people come in, we have a meal, we have people in the community that come and serve. And so when they come, they go, oh, this is Potter's House. And meaning it's this whole group of people, a lot of diversity. And so before people go, oh, I get Potter's House. It's middle class serving the poor. Well, no, it's not. I mean, my kids are Potter's House kids. And I get friends that have high incomes and great family. Their kids are Potter's House kids. And so so there's a meal. And there's an event where we celebrate all the things God's done. We celebrate every graduation, everybody who's graduated from high school, everybody who's graduated from college, if they've graduated from beauty school. And it's drawing great attention to things that have gone on. We tell big stories, people who are married. We show pictures of all the programs and things that have gone on. There's sometimes singing, there's games. Every family goes and takes a family picture, and it is, I mean, social media for us within our social circle is so fun the next day because everybody's sharing their picture. People get dressed up and everybody matches as a family. We give out awards. And then at the end of the night, we bring out a gift from Potter's House to the family, and every family who comes gets the same thing. So if you're sitting at a table and you're a family that is, you know, you've got three kids and you're a middle-class family and you're sitting with your good friends that make a lot less money and look different, well, a basket's going to come out that is a basket that we'd want to receive and give to one another. It's not green beans and pinto beans and, you know, whatever. It's there's a family blanket and there's a family movie and Coke and a popcorn. And it's a gift that says, hey, we as Potter's House love you as a family. And we're glad that we're all involved in this deal together. And so thanks. We love you. We love your kids. Here's a gift for your child. And everybody walks out and it communicates this great message that we're all in this together, as opposed to what Giveaway Day communicated. And it said, we're in this, but I'm here to just help you. And Potter's House Christmas says, hey, we're living this life together. we are walking through this, and we want our kids are the same. We want the same things for our kids. We all want our kids to graduate, and we all want to celebrate them when they graduate. And we're looking for Jesus to intersect our worlds, and we all want to see that happen.
This is the One Thing series from The Atypical Podcast. You can find out more about Sean and his work with Potter's House in the show notes and links at theatypicallife.com. Just a quick reminder, I know you made a middle note, you jotted it down, but you already forgot it because Sean's words were so great. 99balloons.org/all-in, where you can find out more about how to help a child with disability be able to attend school. We love you. Have a good day. Our music today was provided by Paddington Bear and Scott Holmes.